Each year, a certain number of military service members leave with less than honorable discharges because of poor behavior. That means they don't have access to benefits from Veterans Affairs. But what if post-traumatic stress or other mental health problems contributed to the behavior that led to the less than honorable discharge? As Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu reports, that concern has led the Army to take a fresh look at some cases. Jared, you're reporting that the Army is looking at 73 soldiers' cases who left under other than honorable discharge circumstances because of mental health issues.
Yeah, so this is an issue, Tom, that Congress has been looking pretty closely at really ever since the initial impetus was some investigative reporting that was started a couple years ago by a public radio station out in Colorado who had testimony from several soldiers who basically said that they were not being treated very well when they went in for behavioral health appointments within the Army. Several of those soldiers eventually ended up getting kicked out of the Army under less than honorable discharge circumstances, which what led this congressional probe. After an internal audit by the Army, they ended up finding several hundred soldiers who had been kicked out with diagnoses of PTSD or TBI and had less than honorable discharges. And the reason to be concerned about that is if you're discharged with anything less than an honorable discharge, then you don't have access to VA care after the fact. Congress passed a law back in 2009 as part of the National Defense Authorization Act for that year, saying that they wanted commanders to take into consideration soldiers that had deployed over the past 2 years who also had diagnoses of PTSD or TBI and just look at that as a possible factor, whether it may have played a role in whatever bad behavior they're concerned about, whether that is a possible explanation or mitigating factor for the individual discrete thing that they're essentially being punished for. Congress, in passing that law, its main intention was just to make sure that we're not punishing soldiers for behavior or mental health conditions that was actually caused by their time in uniform, by their time deployed overseas, whether that was a physical head injury that caused them to have some mental impairments or a post-traumatic stress, which can also obviously cause mental impairments and cause people to behave a little bit differently. So anyway, this audit that we've been talking about ended up discovering at least 73 soldiers, and in their cases, there's no evidence whatsoever that commanders took these PTSD or TBI conditions into account, went ahead and issued them dishonorable discharges anyway, again, denying them any VA health treatment. So we don't know whether their conditions were directly linked to PTSD or TBI, but it's certainly a possibility, and the Army's going to send all 73 of those back before review boards.
Well, is the purpose of the review to change it to honorable discharge or to get them VA care?
They're sort of one in the same. So we don't want to predispose the review board's decisions. They're going to have to look at each individual case and try to decide. So they're going to have to look at the individual reasons that commanders cited in giving these less than honorable discharges in the first place, then look at their PTSD or TBI or other mental health issues and try and see if there's any potential nexus between those two things, whether the PTSD or TBI could explain whatever quote-unquote bad behavior these soldiers engaged in that caused them to get kicked out of the Army. If they do, they do have the discretion to upgrade their discharges to honorable, so they would then get VA care, and if they wanted to, theoretically, they could re-enlist in the Army, which is another thing that you generally can't do if you're discharged under less than honorable circumstances.
But this does open up a little bit of a can of worms for commanders who are determining discharges, because are they equipped to know whether someone's behavior was in fact caused by PTSD? It seems like you'd need to be a trained psychologist, and even then it's a guess.
It is ultimately up to the commander, but keep in mind they do have access to trained medical staff, and you know, commanders at even fairly low levels in the Army have access to local behavioral health specialists in the same way a commander might have access to a judge advocate general's officer when they're determining whether or not a case should go to court-martial, or as we've seen in some instances, to override the cases, override the decisions made by a court-martial. So commanders have a wide range of responsibilities, but they do have experts in individual fields to help make these decisions. I do want to point out one other can of worms. You brought up the term can of worms. I think another one of them is buried in these statistics are some other interesting facts about just how many soldiers the Army does end up kicking out under less than honorable circumstances. The total number that the Army kicked out between 2009 and 2016 for any reason, including honorable discharge, was 469,000. 68,000 of those, nearly one out of every seven, as I reported in the notebook, had both less than honorable discharges, and they had had behavioral health diagnoses in their military records. So more than 60,000 soldiers who are not going to be able to get who are not going to be able to get care from VA and who we know have PTSD or TBI conditions. I think that warrants looking at on the part of Congress.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. And also in your notebook this week, you report something that seems, I guess, counterintuitive or unexpected. I don't know what you'd call it. DOD research spending took the brunt of sequestration cuts, not weapon systems, not platforms, and not troop levels.
Yeah, everything kind of did take cuts under sequestration, obviously. And when we say sequestration, we're really kind of going back to the whole drawdown that started in 2009, not just those automatic triggered cuts in 2013. But as you point out, the reason this is sort of unexpected is that in past military drawdowns, the military services have tended to cut procurement, buy fewer ships, tanks, airplanes, because they're expensive, but at the same time maintain some pretty significant investment in research and development, so that when budgets bounce back, you've got a pipeline of good science and, you know, ready to field systems the next time you need to go to war. Some new statistics that the Center for Strategic and International Studies has uncovered in one of their deep dives into the federal procurement data system is basically found that's been turned on its head in this past drawdown. So, you know, overall DOD contract dollars for any purpose went down by 35% in that 2009 to 2015 timeframe. Contracts for R&D fell by 53% between 2009 and 2015, which is kind of a stunning number. So not only is the overall pie that DOD spends on contracts getting smaller, but the R&D share of that pie is getting smaller too, which again is very unusual. So it's our R&D is now just 8% of defense contracts compared to 11%, which is what it was 5 years ago. The situation is really the most significant in the Army, where they've had a 60% decrease in R&D spending between 2009 and 2015. And their officials are pretty blunt about this. They have repeatedly lamented the fact that they do not have many new weapon systems in the pipeline. So if there is a need for the Army to go on a big procurement spree at some point in the future, in the near future anyway, they're basically going to be buying the systems that they have fielded right now.
For an Army and for a military that is looking for the next strategic offset, that doesn't seem like a very smart move.
Well, that's right. Again, I think these are problems that the Defense Department is aware of. And I should say that it's not the entire R&D portfolio that's taken a massive hit. When you look at some of the earlier stages of R&D, basic and applied research, those have taken a hit, but they've basically been in line with the rest of the fall off in DoD contract spending, where you really start to see some of the major drop-offs in the 60 to 70% range is in R&D that's more well on its way, that's closer to turning into a fully developed weapon system. So that's where the hits have really been. Part of that has just been some of the cancellations of some very large and expensive systems back during sort of the Bob Gates era, the Army's Future Combat System, probably the most famous of those. And once DoD got rid of some of those large expensive systems, there was really nothing in the pipeline to replace them. There are some notable exceptions, of course. The Air Force is building a couple very large platforms, including its new long-range strategic bomber, but the Army really has nothing comparable to that. The Navy has some instances, such as the Ohio replacement program that's going to be coming up here at some point once they figure out how to pay for it. But again, nothing in the pipeline to replace those canceled systems is part of the explanation.
And they're not going to bring back the Crusader cannon either, are they?
I think that's unlikely.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, thanks so much for that update.
You bet.
Read Jared's DoD Reporter's Notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com.